Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, February the 4th, 35th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, well-known Seahawk fan, Bill McCauley. Yes, we are a little unpredictable, aren't we?
Yeah, that's... you know, I guess there's no truth in radio standards out there.
No. Not in the intro. No. The rest of the show, perhaps.
Yeah, well, anyway.
But look at the smile. See, I got him. Yeah. I absolutely got him on that. It's so simple sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's small mind, it's easy to go after.
But nobody will miss it when it's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's missing it in its current state. Yeah.
So. What do you got over there, Kimasabi?
Oh, I don't know. Just,
big, thick paper clip full of all kinds of wonderful stuff.
Anyway, yeah, there's...
All pertaining to the thing that's in all of our minds?
Well, I don't know. Depends. I mean, some people are more mindful of other details than taxes this time of year.
Not if they're paying them.
Well, most people haven't confronted that issue yet.
Oh, I see. Good. Well, we'll talk about what's waiting around the corner to confront when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with certified public accountant Bill McCauley. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from, okay, now there were two of them here. George Santayana.
Santayana or Santayana?
No, S-A-N-T-A-Y-A-N-A.
Santayana, huh?
Santayana, huh? Or George Burns. And since you already know the George Burns song. Okay, you want to stick with door number one go to door number two?
Are we done with the first segment?
Yeah. Come on. Choice.
Let's Santayana.
All right. Quote, fanaticism consists of redoubling your effort when you've forgotten your aim. Well, we all have people like that running around, don't we? It's not as humorous as the other one.
The other one was better.
Yeah, well, you know, you screwed up and you went with the other quote.
Well, you didn't let me read Santayana's quote. Yeah.
That's true.
So I was flying blind.
Yeah, again.
Ish.
Yeah. February, tax season. Yeah. Yeehaw. They all go together, don't they?
Yeah.
I would think by now a lot of the information should be gathered. True or false?
You mean by taxpayers?
By the individuals, yes.
My guess is that that's not on balance true.
Okay. All the information has been provided, and now it's a matter of us coalescing the information that's necessary.
False.
We haven't paid any attention at all, and we're waiting for spring training and to hear the Giants preseason games on the radio, and then we'll start thinking about it.
Oh, I do like the Giants on the radio. There's nothing better than baseball on the radio. I mean, except Talk Shop. Of course.
That was so close to getting edited out.
All the information is not available yet for some taxpayers. So many of them are going to need additional information that's to come. As an example, if you have a brokerage account, then that 1099 for that account has likely not been issued and probably will not be issued in final form until close to the 15th of February. We're not there yet, right?
Tuesday, February 4th, the 35th day of the...
So that'd be no.
I can read my notes. Yeah. So if that information isn't available, what other stuff... don't we have to panic about yet that we may be waiting for, just as regular guys and gals, first-time taxpayers or frequent flyers?
Well, a lot of people who, you know, a lot of us may have not received all the 1099s that were mailed on or about the 31st of January. You know, your W-2 should have been mailed by then. Your interest income statement from the bank, if you have an account that's got enough money in it to actually have earned interest, and that's a lot more money now because interest rates are so anemic. But so for people, you know, in most cases, I would think most people have received the 1098s. 1098 forms report mortgage interest that was paid for the year, and generally those there's no particular reason to wait till close to the end of January, and a lot of companies are pretty on top of it and get those out relatively early. So my guess is most people have those and would have had them for a week or two by now. But the W-2s, that depends. We've got clients who you know, are calling saying, I've got everything but my W-2, and it's like, okay, I'm sure it'll be here, and you know, sure enough, it'll show up. So
what happens if you don't have a form? You mentioned bank interest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so somebody's got a couple of grand in the bank just kind of sitting there. Okay, and that's pretty much what it's doing. Mm-hmm. Just sitting there. It's not like it's exercising or developing anything or creating anything. It's just a buck and a half.
Yeah.
Okay, is that worth waiting for?
Here's the reality. You can wait until April 15th, and you probably still won't get one, because if it's under $10, the banks aren't required to send a 1099 INT, which reports the interest income on the bank account. So if you're – and generally, you can look at your December statement and see, oh, gee, it was, you know, $8.33. Well, you know you're not going to get a 1099. Now, technically, that doesn't mean that $8.33 still isn't taxable income, but it's not going to be reported on a 1099. And I would guess that a lot of those amounts that come through, you know, where somebody's got, you know, $5.63, that they probably don't report the $6. And I think the IRS has probably concluded it's not worth following for, yeah. And it's not worth the additional burden for the financial institutions to have to report for that many more accounts.
So that's a gimme?
Should be, yeah.
Not that I've had a lot of gimmies in life.
But. Well, you could be happy. What you ought to do is spend all the money in your savings account so you don't get much interest. And if you can get it where you earn just under $10, the IRS won't know about it.
Wow. That's a plan. I have to reflect on that one.
Yeah, success in financial planning.
Now, how can I spend $354 in the next KINS News and Information Times 319?
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. You want to go for another quote?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure, anything.
Can you do the George Burns ones off the top of your head?
Off the top
from
of
memory?
My head? I could get probably about two-thirds of the words. Might have half of them in the right order. It was something about aging. Yeah. I'm just kind of standing behind that one.
Well, you know, you are younger than I am, so.
That's right. So you must really be in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. Explains a lot.
Yeah. Was it that extra week or so?
Extra 9 days.
Just really drives it through the floor, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I'm out there blazing a trail for you, Brian.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just knock down the cobwebs.
I'm not tall enough to knock down all the cobwebs that you need.
What are some of the deductions that are out there that folks may not perceive are things that are deductible? One of the surprises that I had was magazines.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you still are a traditionalist and have get the magazines, the trade magazines, or the glossies, or the consumer ones, depending on what your occupation is, some of those are actually deductible.
Yes, they are. And it depends on your line of business, and that becomes an itemized deduction for people. You know, if, in your case, you're actively involved in the media, so if it would be logical that you would
see that I'm active.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's active. Wink, wink.
Yeah. Oh darn.
And so you would logically be monitoring what's going on in the media. So you would have trade publications that are talking about what's going on with, in particular, probably focused on radio. But you would also be looking at other media type of communications. You may be getting newsletters. You might be getting magazines or other resources of that kind of that nature. In your case, I could see where. Because you are actively involved in topical news and other things, that you might have a reason for having other things that most of us wouldn't deduct, like even maybe a local paper, because that information, you know, if you were taking the local paper or whatever, or if you're taking, you know, if you're other types of resources that if you had a subscription to a some other local news source or something like that, those things would be logical given the fact that in your case. Now, you take.
How broad out could I go with this? Let's say, okay, involved in marketing and advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Any magazine that has an ad in it?
I think that's probably pushing it.
Okay.
I think it would probably be more any magazines that are that deal with the business community that you interact with. Any magazine.
So an automotive magazine. If I have an automotive client,
in your case, you would want to you'd want to understand what motivates an automotive client to be trying to attract customers and how they would want to do that, because you know it's one thing to place an ad, but you want to sell the next, you know, you want to sell them again, so therefore you want to be effective with the ad, not just get a one-time dollar from someone.
But Archie Magazine or Mad Magazine might not qualify.
I would think it would be that'd be a harder argument to make. You're a little more unique. Most of us would have a little difficulty making that same argument. I mean, although I would say from the standpoint that most of us who are in business in the local community have a business need to be current with what's going on in the community, and I think you know many of us
easier one to have discussions about.
Mm-hmm.
The Chronicle,
mm-hmm.
the Bee might be the Mail Tribune might mm-hmm. be a little bit more challenging. The LA Times.
Might for you as an example, because I know you have stations in Oregon, the Mail Tribune might make a lot of sense. Or if you had a signal that bounced all the way down into other markets, you might be saying that. Or you might have a reason to say, look, we're monitoring these markets for other reasons. We want to know.
So a business justification.
Yeah, you've
got
to be able to say this is an ordinary and necessary type expense that a person would incur in my line of business to be informed about.
So let's say somebody is a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, still professional, still research-based, still mm-hmm. trying. So the trades would be acceptable.
No question.
Any of the rags would be obviously part of that also. But now what if we start getting into some of the broad-based, is Time Magazine still published?
Time or Life no longer does. I think Time does and Life doesn't.
Okay. So Time Magazine, if they've got a column on healthcare,
mm-hmm.
viable?
If they had a regular column on healthcare that was
regular weekly,
that was relevant to, I think you'd have an argument for it.
Okay.
If it's just general on healthful topics that they have every once in a while, I think it's a harder argument to make.
So is that an area most people are familiar with, or is that an area that many are surprised by?
Well, here's the issue, is that for a lot of people, if take a nurse may be working for, let's say they're working for a hospital and they're being paid as an employee. If they're going to deduct the expenses associated with their periodicals, they're going to take those in miscellaneous itemized deduction. In order to deduct the miscellaneous itemized deduction, it's got to exceed your total miscellaneous itemized deductions have to exceed 2% of your adjusted gross income. So I'm going to just throw a number out. Let's say that nurse is making $50,000 a year. Okay, Brian, math test. That $50,000, and they have no other source of income. What's 2% of $50,000?
Thousand.
Very good.
Hey.
So, to the extent that the miscellaneous deductions that a person has that exceed that this particular taxpayer has that exceeds $1,000, it might benefit them to claim those deductions. If their miscellaneous deductions total $180 and they've got another $60 for a periodical, it's not going to matter. So
kind of like interest from the banks.
It's one of those things, Brian, where you look at it and you say, yes, I got your point.
Okay, good.
It's one of those situations where everybody's a little different, and you can't necessarily look at one person because maybe one nurse who's making $50,000 owns a home and another one doesn't, and their impacts could be very different.
It's 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with CPA Bill McCauley. Bill, some of the other areas that seem to be curious, and I suppose deductions are kind of an area of curiosity because a lot of us will fight like the Dickens to get, and maybe it's worth it, and maybe it's not, and maybe we qualify, and maybe we don't. It seems to me that for a lot of us, education is a huge black pit. And is it deductible? Is it not deductible? Is this part of it? Is that part of it? Are there some basic rudimentary yes around education, tuition, student loans, things of that nature?
Sure. There are some basic rules. Most every piece of tax law that governing that's education related, I guess I should say, is based on some kind of phase out of the ability for one to avail themselves of it. So what happens is, so if you are making a multi-million dollar salary, you can just forget about the education expenses.
Tough noogies.
And actually, if you're making in many cases much over $100,000, you can forget
about it. Oh, really? Is that low?
Yes.
Married filing?
Yes, even on a joint filing. If you're making much over $100,000, most of the available education benefits are gone or are nearly gone at that point.
Now, that's interesting considering the huge escalation of tuition that has happened over the last 4 or 5 years. I know in many cases it's come down the last year or so with reality of the recession, but that's interesting that it would be at that level so that two folks working – and if they had a kid going to school, might not be able to take advantage of it.
The problem, or part of the problem, is that the these pieces of law were put in place to provide targeted assistance, and so you start looking, saying, okay, that then they phase out and they're no longer available to other people, and the presumption is, gee, if they're making more money, they can afford to pay for all of it themselves. You know, when you're paying those bills, it never, you know, for most people who are in that boat or in those shoes, most people don't feel like, you know, they feel stretched with these education expenses. So
you put a couple of kids through at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, and most people, when we start explaining those rules to them, feel that it's not, you know, people who are impacted by the fact they're not going to get a lot of benefit, you know, they're a little frustrated by it and a little disenchanted that gee, that doesn't affect me. I'm not rich. I'm just, you know, we're just, my wife and I work, and we're trying to put two kids through school, and we're paying this amount of money. And you're telling me I'm not going to get much benefit. And the reality is, a person doesn't get all. There's not a heap of benefit out there for those expenditures. And there are, as an example, There are certain people within certain AGI ranges, adjusted gross income ranges, can deduct student loan interest. And so that's one area where we see people getting benefit. There are also are some tuition deductions that are available, and we see people that get those. But again, AGI is a big factor. Then the other choices are some tax credits. And we always, you know, remember that we love tax credits because tax credits reduce tax dollar for dollar, whereas deductions reduce your income that the tax is calculated upon. So we like credits. And so when we are looking at education issues, we look to see, okay, we try to optimize. Does it make more sense that this be that the taxpayer take the American Opportunity Tax Credit, or do they take the tuition deduction? And you know, these things all are changing. We still have some of these in the law. You know, for 2013, 2014, there's going to be some other changes. So the benefits are not huge, but any benefit feels good when you're, you know, you're working to try to get a kid through college.
What about the scenario where the kid has part of the loan or a loan and the folks have had to co-sign on another portion? Is that something that's clean and easy, or is that also something that can be convoluted and also subject to the adjusted gross income?
Yeah, the AGI rules come into play for deducting the interest on the student loans, and so a parent can deduct the interest if they're on the hook, if they're obligated on the loan, and it was used for qualified medical expenses and qualified education expenses, and
they often are related.
Indeed, and if it was used for appropriate expenses, then and a parent's obligated and they make the payment, they can deduct it. But there are, again, AGI phase-outs. So these things all become challenging when you start working through them to try to get them in the right return and in a way that the benefit is derived, you know, in the most efficient way.
Is there any distinction between high school, junior college, postgraduate degrees?
Yes, most of the education nearly all the education provisions in the tax law are focused at post-secondary education. So I think you can take some money out of like a education IRA and do a little bit of stuff that's before college, but for the most part, the education IRA is commonly referred to as a Coverdell IRA. So if you hear Coverdell, that applies to education. And for the most part, we're talking about post-secondary education costs.
For someone going to graduate school, let's say the non-traditional, been in life for 20 years, now you're going back. Is that treated the same as somebody coming right out of high school?
Largely, yes.
That's largely enough for me, then.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Well, you kind of relate to largely, right?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Not the graduate thing. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m., Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Are we going to see you next month?
Let's see, March
11th, or March 4th.
March 4th, maybe. Yeah,
maybe, okay.
Maybe. March 11th won't be a good day, but March 4th might not be a good day.
March 4th.
Yeah.
We have a chance to see it.
Yeah, okay. March 11th is, that's corporate, we'll be.
That's getting into heavy time.
We'll be cranking corporate returns.
Yeah, it'd be otherwise occupied.
Yeah.
Automotive deductions, job-related deductions, medical deductions, things of that nature. Are they worth it for the average guy or gal to track?
I hate to say this, but it does depend. I mean, if you're itemizing deductions,
more than just home ownership.
Yeah, I mean, if you're itemizing deductions, which means, you know, most people to itemize, most people have a home mortgage and they deduct the mortgage interest. That's the most common and the biggest single item in that pot.
That's the chunk.
Yeah, and then state taxes comes on in there and charitable contributions. And you've got some people who have huge charitable contributions and little else, but that's because that's how they're motivated. So, I mean, there's no cookie-cutter taxpayer out there. But in general, the biggest itemized deduction on most returns is going to be the home mortgage deduction. So and that's generally the one that triggers people to be able to quote-unquote what we call itemize, which means that their total itemized deductions exceed the standard deduction. For most of our clients that bring, you know, that give us the information, we run the numbers. And we got some who are close every year where it's, you know, and, you know, really if you trip over by $45, it's really not, you know, it's barely worth keeping track of it for that kind of a thing. Because you're having to keep track of your charitable contributions and, you know, some of these other miscellaneous itemized deductions that might be out there. You know, my safety clothing and, you know, I got boots. I have to wear a certain kind of boots when I'm at work or whatever the case might be.
Education expenses don't tend to be enough to trigger it, but if you do have a home, then I would think the two of those together would probably be more likely than medical. Yeah.
Well, the education expenses will generally fall outside of the Schedule A. They're going to fall. They're generally not going to be. You're not going to see those except for certain types of education expenses that a person might have that relate to specifically within their business if they're an employee. So let's say as an example, I'm an employee. Let's go back to our nurse.
Ed.
There you go.
Doesn't that qualify?
If I was an employee, then yeah, I could, and I had to pay my continuing education. That would be a miscellaneous itemized deduction for me. If you are the same tax guy, but yet you're self-employed and you operate a business, then you would deduct it against your business income directly, and it wouldn't go on as a miscellaneous itemized deduction. So again, it depends on facts and circumstances and what a particular, you know, somebody's situation might be.
Vehicle expenses.
Yeah,
that's probably one area that a lot of folks either really know well or don't appreciate at all. How does that one work?
Well, it depends on your situation. In general, if you're going to have vehicle expenses, it's going to relate to a trade or business. You may also get – we do track mileage because you can deduct mileage for medical purposes, and there's a rate, specific tax rate for medical miles. There's also charitable miles. There you get a deduction per mile for charitable travel. But – in general, when we're talking about a miscellaneous deduction, it's an employee business expense. It's someone who's driving for work and they're not being reimbursed for it from their employer. Or if the reimbursement is coming in, it's less than the actual cost associated with
it. A partial.
Yeah. And so in that case, then a person it's incumbent upon them to track their mileage so they have an understanding of what business miles are out there. Plus, they need to keep and you can use the standard mileage rate. You just go, okay, this is my business miles times the standard mileage rate, which I think is 56.5 cents. And you can go and say, all right, that's my standard mileage rate for business travel, and I'm not going to keep track of the actual. Or you can keep track of the actual and compare and contrast and take the higher of the two.
Does the type of rig you drive matter?
That's a bigger question than you might imagine. It might matter if you're depreciating the vehicle, because if it's over a certain weight, then more liberal rules apply for deducting the cost of the vehicle.
Consult your tax professional. Is that
comes
in at this time? Okay.
Yeah, it's a, you know, taxation's a complicated thing. I mean, some people have simple situations; it's pretty easy. Other people need some help.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
We've been talking shop with Bill McCauley. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.